Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So the last couple of episodes have been really about the sort of big systemic shifts that take place in the body when it comes to transitioning through the perimenopause phase and how that really just impacts us metabolically. We talked about autoimmunity, we talked about how the gut changes, symptoms and issues that it can bring, and of course, the all-important action steps that you can take. So those are all in the previous 2 to 3 episodes. And so today we are talking about something different, something I've not really touched on, mostly because it isn't my area of expertise nor my area of qualification. So we are going to talk about hormone replacement therapy today, but I want to preface this by saying that I'm in no way qualified to advise on hormone therapy. It is a conversation that you need to be having with your doctor, with a medical professional who really understands you, your own situation, your own needs, and obviously really understands hormone therapy and can prescribe it. So that isn't me. I'm a nutritional therapist who is qualified to help and support people with nutrition and lifestyle habits, or call it nutrition and lifestyle therapy, I suppose. But of course, because I specialize in the area of perimenopause and women's health, I do need to have a basic understanding of hormone therapy, the types available and, you know, how they can support people. But as I said, it's not an area that I'm in any way qualified or allowed to advise on. So I do have a basic understanding, which is exactly what I'm going to share with you today. And this episode has come about because I reached out to my email community last week to ask for any burning questions that they have, or, you know, specific things that they'd like to know more about on my podcast. And thank you to those of you who replied. I've really, really appreciated reading through your responses and your questions. There really are some great questions and topics that you want to know more about, and I'm looking forward to addressing those over the next few episodes. But I did have a couple of requests for more information on HRT, and one person's email in particular I thought asked some really good questions about it. So I'm going to address those today. I'm going to address this person's questions on this episode. I'm going to call this person Ella, just for the sake of keeping her anonymous, because she didn't say that I could, you know, share her question. So I won't use her real name, but we'll just call her Ella for the sake of the episode. So Ella basically said that she wants to know about HRT. She wants to know what it stands for. She says she knows what it stands for, sorry, but that's about it. And I think many of you listening to this might resonate with Ella's further questions about it. So let's just dive in, and I'll sort of weave through Ella's full questions and her full sort of email things that she wanted to know as we go through the episode. But we'll dive in first because she asked quite a few things, so we'll sort of take it step by step. So the first thing that she said was, I know what HRT stands for, but that's about it. And then she went on to say some other things which we'll get into. So let's first talk about what HRT actually is. So HRT stands for hormone replacement therapy, and it refers to adding in hormone therapy, so essentially taking estrogen and progesterone, for example, when the ovaries have stopped making those hormones. So we are replacing the hormones that the ovaries have now stopped making. So we get to the point where the ovaries have stopped making those hormones when you've gone 12 months without having a period, and therefore you've reached menopause. But we can also get to menopause surgically or medically induced menopause without having to have gone the sort of 12, you know, the natural 12-month transition without having a period. If we're reaching menopause due to having surgery, for example, having your ovaries removed, or other types of surgery, not necessarily getting your ovaries removed, but having your uterus removed, for example, can sometimes bring a person to menopause. There's different sort of reasons for it. But the most obvious one is having your ovaries removed. That person would wake up from that surgery essentially in menopause, whatever stage, whatever age they're at. So they wouldn't have gone, you know, 12, necessarily gone 12 months without having a period in order to reach menopause. They've actually just reached menopause as a result of their surgery. And it can also be medically induced, which would be, for example, a result of having chemotherapy, radiotherapy, something like tamoxifen after chemotherapy for somebody diagnosed with cancer, for example. Those are just some examples. And that person can then get to a point where they don't have their periods anymore and they are in menopause. And also hormone therapy includes testosterone. So if it's low, although the ovaries aren't the only or main source of testosterone production, so it's not always needed, but for some women in perimenopause or particularly postmenopause, if their testosterone is very low, then HRT also refers to testosterone. So estrogen, progesterone and testosterone. But the sort of phrase of replacement therapy is essentially referring to the fact that you're no longer making them and now you're replacing them. But then we have the term MHT, which stands for menopause hormone therapy, which is the preferred term today for more progressive doctors in the kind of modern menopause hormone therapy space. They prefer to refer to it as menopause hormone therapy because you may not only just be taking hormones when your ovaries have stopped making them, you may also be introducing hormone therapy before you get to that stage. And we'll talk more about that as we go through. So it's the preferred term, MHT, menopause hormone therapy. Because we can, as I said, we can be using hormone therapy during perimenopause, but also after the menopause transition. So MHT also applies to women who are still having their periods, but not making good enough amounts of estrogen and or progesterone, and would potentially benefit from maybe topping up their levels for improvement in certain symptoms, a quality of life, for example. We'll talk about that as we go through. And I've got my own sort of story with that as well, which I'll share. The term replacement doesn't really fit for those women because they're not actually replacing their hormones. They're not needing to completely replace them because they're still making them. Rather, they just need to top them up to support their mental and physical well-being as they transition through the menopause, whenever that will be for them. And then potentially post-menopause, they'll still be using that hormone therapy. And, you know, at that point, it's replacing the hormones they're no longer making. But I think, you know, over time that the term HRT will probably be scrapped and it'll be the MHT as the most preferred way to describe it. So most experts as well will now agree that it's not too early to start using hormone therapy if you're not yet menopausal. And as I said, I'll explain my own little story with this as we go through. So after Ella said that she understands what HRT stands for, but that's about it, she then went on to say that she has a friend aged 42 who's recently started HRT, or let's call it hormone therapy, and has never felt better. While she has another friend aged 41 who tried it and came off it. I'm presuming, she didn't say why her friend came off it, but I'm presuming because she didn't feel good on it, maybe made her feel worse, it just didn't work for her. And then Ella said she has another friend with a medical background who said you can only be on HRT for 10 years, so delay it for as long as possible. So, of course, Ella said she's getting these mixed messages. She has no idea at what point, if any, she should be going to a GP to discuss hormone therapy. She says, I'm also highly sensitive. I could never tolerate the contraceptive pill with how it made me feel, in terms of how it made her feel. And she wonders if this would be the same with hormone HRT. Are there any side effects? So we will go through each and everything that she has discussed. So we've kind of outlined what HRT stands for. She wants to know exactly whether every woman requires it, whether every woman needs it. So we'll kind of unpack all of this now. So let's start with her friends who started hormone therapy and had different experiences. So Ella's 42-year-old friend who he's doing really well with it. This is the one that says it's sort of changed her life, I think. So she may have had low levels of estrogen and progesterone already, despite being 42, which seems a young age for these hormones to have fallen already, but it's not uncommon. So the average age to reach menopause, to have gone 12 months without having a period, is 51, 52. But it's not the only age or the right age. It's just the average today for a woman to get there. But some women can reach menopause early, between the ages of 40 and 45, for example. That's just classed as early menopause. If there's been no particular reason, you know, obvious reason, like medically induced or surgically induced, some women can just get there between 40 and 45, 46, let's say. In this case, their ovarian production of hormones may already be dropping as early as 42. And so therefore, if they start hormone therapy around 42, where their levels have already stopped dropping, then it's likely to help them and improve their symptoms. So give them some symptom relief and give them some, you know, quality of life back that they may have lost due to symptoms of declining hormones. And then perhaps Ella's other friend, age 41, who said she had a bad experience with it. I'm not sure what actually happened, but she just came off it because it wasn't working. Maybe she didn't have declining levels of estrogen and or progesterone, but she suspected she did because of various symptoms and was advised to try hormone therapy. So, for example, you know, at 41, we might start experiencing things like hot flushes, low mood, low energy, and we may assume this is due to declining estrogen. But actually, because what's really happening at the earlier stages of perimenopause, which would be around 41, 42 in the average woman, we may assume that estrogen is declining, but usually it's not. It's actually higher now than it's ever been before, sometimes three times higher than it's ever been before. But what's really happening is that it's going on this erratic roller coaster. It's fluctuating erratically, so erratically that when we get these sudden drops of estrogen that we weren't having before, because it was fluctuating before, sort of 20s and 30s, but not erratically. So we weren't getting these really sharp dips that we're now having in the earlier stages of perimenopause. And these sharp dips can result in typical sort of low estrogen symptoms like hot flushes, mood issues, sleep issues, maybe weight gain, you know, these kind of things. So you may think, oh, this is early menopause. I have low estrogen, and you may be advised to take it, or, you know, maybe I'm not sure why this woman at 41 did go to have HRT. We don't know that, obviously, from the email. These are just my assumptions. So let's say she had healthy levels of estrogen, but she started estrogen therapy, then she would feel worse for taking it because she doesn't need it. And adding in more is only going to cause further issues rather than actually bringing her the solutions that she maybe wanted. So what is probably happening age 41 for the average woman is that estrogen's on a roller coaster, but not actually declining yet. But progesterone is declining, because progesterone is the first hormone that does start to decline in perimenopause. It starts early as late 30s, early 40s. Usually most women are experiencing a decline in the production of progesterone. So maybe Ella's friend at 41 only needed progesterone, but she was given both. I don't know from the email which she was taking, whether it was both, whether it was just estrogen. But I'm just assuming that potentially she was given estrogen, but maybe she only needed progesterone, which would have helped. But the fact that she didn't need estrogen and she was given it, it made her feel worse, and therefore it didn't work for her and she came off. So this is obviously just an assumption, and Ella can correct me if she wants to send me another email and let me know exactly what the situation was, and we can address it on another episode if I've assumed wrong. So the other thing, so now that you sort of understand what HRT, MHT, let's talk about body identical hormone therapy versus synthetic hormones, because there's some confusion here as well, so which is really common. So if you remember, going back to Ella's email, she talked about one of her questions was that she was highly sensitive when she took the pill. So she's wondering if HRT will be the same. Will she have those same side effects? So this is where there's some confusion as well. So let's clear that up. So Ella didn't say whether or not her friends are taking body identical estrogen and progesterone, or if they've used, if they were given synthetic forms, for example, the ones found in the oral contraceptive pills, implants, or the Mirena coil, for example. So they have synthetic forms of estrogen and progesterone. The Mirena coil has synthetic form of progesterone. It doesn't contain estrogen. But I'm going to assume in the email that her friends were taking body identical. So let's explain what that actually means. Body identical hormone therapy refers to estrogen and progesterone in their body identical forms. Identical meaning it's exactly the same in molecular structure as the hormones that your body, your ovaries, produce. This is now basically the gold standard of hormone therapy, and it's the type that most, if not all, doctors are prescribing. It's naturally derived, and it's the safest, most effective type of hormone therapy, according to doctors. Now, body identical hormone therapy is thoroughly tested and researched, and it's recommended by the National Institute of Health and Care Excellence in the UK. So that's NICE, and prescribed by the NHS and through private GPs and menopause specialist clinics. It includes estradiol, which is the main sort of active estrogen. When we talk about estrogen, we're basically referring to estradiol. So body identical hormone therapy is estradiol that you take through your skin in a patch, a gel or a spray. And it also refers to progesterone that's known as micronized progesterone. The most common brand in the UK for the progesterone is Utrogestan, and that's taken in capsule form. And it also refers to testosterone, body identical testosterone. So in the UK, brand names for body identical estrogen include Everil, Estradot, Estragel, Sandrina, and Lenzetto. So they're just some of the sort of more well-known brands in the UK. Body identical hormone therapy is basically derived from the yam plant and soy, and it has the same, as I said, molecular structure as the hormones that your ovaries naturally produce. So when we take these, they go into the body and they work in exactly the same way as the real thing would if we were making it, or if we're not making enough of it, we're still making it, but just not enough. Then this goes into the body and does the same, works in the same way. That's why it's the safest form and the most effective, because it isn't a synthetic chemical that's going into the body. It is something that's exactly the same as what your body would have made or is making, but not enough of. The estrogen in most body identical forms of hormone therapy is called 17-beta-estradiol. And that is, as I said, a gel, a patch, or a spray. Synthetic estrogen is often referred to as ethinyl estradiol, and it's usually taken orally. And that works very differently in the body than body identical forms that I just mentioned. Now, in some cases, women who are just moving through perimenopause, so they haven't yet hit menopause, they're prescribed synthetic hormones like the oral contraceptive pill or the Mirena coil. So the oral contraceptive pill contains the synthetic form of, it's called ethinyl estradiol. There's other names for it as well. And also progestogen, which is the synthetic form of progesterone. And then the Mirena coil doesn't have the estrogen, as far as I'm aware, but it has the synthetic form of progesterone, basically known as a progestin. They are usually prescribed to women who are having, for example, seriously heavy periods, because progesterone, and they're really troublesome. They're very heavy. They're very painful. They're clotty. And that does essentially create some kind of risk as well in terms of endometrial cancers. And essentially what progesterone does, it keeps your womb lining thin and healthy. So if these women are really, really struggling with heavy, painful periods, even, for example, endometriosis cases, they may be prescribed something like Mirena coil, is quite a common one, because it contains progestin, which is a synthetic form of progesterone, but it has the ability to keep, like the real progesterone does, to keep your womb lining thin and healthy and prevent those really heavy, painful, clotty periods, and therefore reduce endometrial cancer risk as well. So as part of the menstrual cycle, estrogen basically builds up the lining, making it thick and fluffy. And then progesterone, its partner hormone, should come along halfway through the cycle after ovulation to help thin the lining, allowing us to have a healthy period that isn't painful, too thick or clotty. So as I said, the synthetic progesterone known as progestin or progestogen does come along and help through something like the Mirena coil or the contraceptive pill to help thin that lining to prevent those heavy, heavy periods. But unfortunately, progestin being a synthetic form of progesterone is not molecularly the same as the real thing. So it doesn't offer the same brain protective, sleep supportive, calming benefits that the body identical micronized progesterone capsules do. Progestins protect the uterine lining, of course, from those proliferative effects of estrogen on the womb lining, but it doesn't offer those brain-based benefits that we get from molecularly identical progesterone, which we really do need in perimenopause. When our own progesterone starts to decline, I've said this on previous episodes, the most common symptoms to start experiencing in the earlier stages of perimenopause are things like sleep issues, anxiety or new anxiety or worsening anxiety or irritability. And that can usually be due to that decline in progesterone. So if we you know, if we speak to our doctor and our doctor decides that we would benefit from taking progesterone, then it should ideally be in the body identical form, because it would help us not only with the uterine lining, but also with those brain-based benefits. But like I said, these are conversations to have with your doctor, because some women are not candidates for various reasons for taking micronized body identical progesterone. And if they really, really need to have, you know, the sort of anti-proliferation effects on the uterine lining of progesterone, they may have no other choice but to be prescribed Myrinacoil or the pill. So progesterone, one note is that progesterone can be taken alone, but estrogen can't. So early on in perimenopause, when progesterone is the one that's declining and causing various symptoms, if somebody was to speak to a menopause specialist GP or maybe the, you know, menopause specialist doctor, they may be advised that they they may be prescribed progesterone on its own, and then estrogen later on in the stages, later stages of perimenopause, when it's genuinely declining and they actually need it. But progesterone is usually something that declines first, as I said. But we don't, if we're ever prescribed estrogen, we shouldn't really be taking that on its own, because we do, as I said, we need that partner hormone progesterone, which works to balance out that lining and prevent those very heavy, painful periods. So if you still have a womb and you're ready for estrogen therapy, it's important that you're also taking progesterone alongside the estrogen in order to keep your womb lining thin and healthy. But okay, of course, these are just conversations that you need to be having with your doctor. So all I'm really doing is sharing the knowledge that I have from doctors with you, so that you kind of know what to maybe speak about, or if they speak to you about certain things, you'll understand why they're saying that, for example. So what did I want to move on to? Okay, so the next thing that Ella said was about getting mixed messages, having no idea at what point, if any, she should be going to a GP for HRT. And she also said that she's highly sensitive and could never tolerate the contraceptive pill in terms of how it made her feel. She wonders if this would be the same with HRT. Are there any side effects, or are the side effects the same as what she had in the past with the contraceptive pill? So in short, using body identical hormone therapy won't be the same as using contraceptive medications. Those medications contain the synthetic forms, as I said, of estrogen and progesterone. So they contain a progestin. And it's a synthetic form of both of those hormones. The role of those medications is to shut off the brain to ovary communication, so that the ovaries don't get the signaling from the brain each month to ovulate, and therefore you can't get pregnant. But you also don't get to produce your natural levels of estrogen or progesterone anymore while you're on the oral contraceptive medication for however long that is. But the side effects of synthetic hormones are, they can be many and they can be not very nice. I went on the pill in my late teens up in my early 20s, and it was, for me, horrendous mood-wise. I switched from different brands, different brand to different brand, going back to my doctor saying, I'm not feeling good, I'm very depressed. This is, you know, my emotions are all over the place. My mood is all over the place. This isn't normal. So we would just keep trying different brands to see if it was any better. In the end, I just had to come off it. I think I was aged about 24, and I just decided enough is enough. You know, it was interfering with my relationships, with my friendships, with my boyfriend at the time, my family life. It was just horrible. So I came off it, and then I looked into the copper coil, and I got that inserted, which is hormone free. The copper coil isn't troublesome free, but it's a damn sight better than taking the synthetic hormones, which weren't working for me. So I don't know from Ella's email what sort of symptoms she was having, but she did say she said she was highly sensitive to the contraceptive pill in terms of how it made her feel. So I'm maybe assuming there was mood issues there potentially, but it can cause other things like anxiety, depression, androgenic or testosterone-like symptoms like acne, hair loss, mood swings, weight gain. So breast tenderness, headaches. So all of these sorts of unwanted symptoms, you know, just in terms of wanting to use contraception, for me personally, it just wasn't worth it. So I had to look for a different option. So, you know, the role of those medications is to prevent that brain to ovary communication. And then it puts in those synthetic hormones, which essentially shut off the production of estrogen and progesterone from your ovaries. So they don't work in the same way. And I hope you understand that now when I explained earlier that how body identical hormones basically go into the body and they work in exactly the same way, whereas the synthetic hormones found in the oral contraceptive medications, they don't work in the same way. They may, you know, they just don't have the same kind of benefits that the real estrogen and progesterone do have. So in answer to Ella's question, will I, you know, I was sensitive to the contraceptive pill, will I feel the same on HRT? The likelihood is no, you will feel better. You know, you'll feel good for it, if anything. So for me, it was only in my 30s when I actually learned how important it is for the body to be ovulating and to be making natural progesterone and estrogen. And most women, many women, never even get this information. It was only because I was studying to be a nutritional therapist and we had modules on, you know, hormone health and how ovulation works and how we make these hormones that I actually learned it. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't be any more wiser to it today at 45. But going back to hormone therapy, body identical estrogen, progesterone essentially puts back these naturally produced hormones. If you're postmenopause, it's replacing them. If you are premenopause, you're still in perimenopause, it will be topping them up if those levels are declining. And we're potentially still cycling, still having periods, but we're not yet menopausal, but we're not making the same robust amount of estrogen and progesterone as we were before in our 30s. And we're feeling the effects of losing those hormones. And I'll explain my story in a minute. And we just need some support. We need this sort of top up. Potentially. But again, these are conversations between you and your doctor. So essentially, because body identical hormone therapy is different to what's contained in the contraceptive medications, it's unlikely that you're going to be affected in the same way negatively if you were sensitive to the contraceptive pill like Ella was and like I was when I was younger. So just remember that body identical estrogen and progesterone, they're molecularly the same as what we produce in our ovaries. So if you're using them at a time when your ovaries are no longer producing enough or any estrogen and progesterone, depending on where you are in your perimenopause, menopause journey, then they should only do good in terms of symptoms. Ella also asked, does every woman require hormone replacement therapy? It's a personal choice. And again, I can't say this enough. It's one that should be discussed with a qualified menopause specialist, medical doctor, prescribing doctor. There are some cases when a woman is not a good candidate for hormone therapy. For example, those with a history of estrogen-driven cancers, whether personally or in the family, you would need to, you know, speak to your doctor about whether you are a good candidate or not. From my knowledge, it's not a hard no. If you have a family history of estrogen-driven cancers, I do in my family. But the conversation with your doctor, they'll be looking at your own health history, your family health history, your own unique situation. They may or may not advise it. You know, these are just conversations. If you're somebody who's had cancer, estrogen-driven cancer, then you'd have this conversation, for example, with your oncologist or other doctor, you know, whatever applies. Some women just don't want to put estrogen and progesterone back in once they've reached menopause. And that can be because they simply want to embrace the natural phase of that is menopause, which is that we no longer make these hormones. Our ovaries stop making them. We can still make a tiny bit of estrogen in other ways in the body. But, you know, ovarian production of estrogen, which is where most of it came from, and progesterone has ceased. And that's what naturally menopause is. And some women just want to embrace that. And I completely respect that. And I understand it. Personally, I want to use hormone therapy once I reach menopause. I want the heart, bone and brain protective benefits from body identical estrogen and progesterone. Even though menopause is a natural transition, that's just my personal feeling towards it. And, you know, again, being 45 now, I didn't expect that I would be experiencing the sort of symptoms that I've been experiencing for the last 3 to 4 months. Well, they've been ongoing. I think it all started about 9-10 months ago, and it's got progressively more intense over the last few months or 3 to 4 months. And I can really, I resonate with a lot of low estrogen symptoms more and more as each month goes past. I've done a lot of because this is a kind of conversation for another episode, but I've done quite a lot of testing over the last, say, year into what my estrogen is doing at different points in the cycle. I haven't just had like a one-off estrogen test and gone, oh, okay, it's high, or oh, okay, it's low. Because in perimenopause, when estrogen's on its roller coaster, it's very hard to actually decipher from just this one-off blood test of estrogen if it's low or if it's high on that particular test. Is this real? You know, is this genuine in terms of, are my levels actually low or actually high, or is this all part of the roller coaster? But because I've done some quite extensive testing over the last 12 months myself, just to see, you know, where my estrogen is at different points in the cycle, it has been following a pattern of decline in the last 12 months. And now the most recent testing I've done at different points in my menstrual cycle, I'm still having pretty regular menstrual cycles. They were getting shorter and now they seem to be getting longer, which is quite common. That's like basically how perimenopause goes. The cycles tend to get shorter in the beginning and then they tend to start getting a bit longer. Mine is still, you know, 20, 26, 27 days, but I am noticing more and more low estrogen symptoms with each passing month. And as I said, my most recent estrogen blood testing did show that it's got even lower again at these two different points in my cycle. So I decided to go and see a menopause specialist GP. I will tell you about the doctor that I saw in a moment. She was wonderful. We had a 90-minute consultation where we talked through all of my symptoms, when they started, how they've been sort of progressed over time, how intense they are now. She really sort of dug into everything. And she agreed by looking at my test results as well, alongside my symptoms, because most doctors will go by symptoms as opposed to testing because things are a bit erratic in perimenopause. But she did agree that I could benefit from topping up my levels, just starting with a very low dose estrogen gel, body identical estrogen and progesterone, the micronized progesterone capsules, to see if that helps improve my symptoms. And if it does, then I'm onto a winner. You know, my levels are declining at 45. I didn't think they'd start to decline at 45. I thought I'd be just riding the estrogen perimenopause roller coaster until my later 40s before I saw an actual decline in estrogen. But everybody's different. And for me, for whatever reason, mine is starting to decline a little bit earlier than I thought. So rather than suffer and just continue to say, well, I'm too young and I'm going to wait until I get to menopause, rather than suffer with these symptoms, I'm going to do something about it and get some support by way of the body identical estrogen and progesterone, low doses, just to see if it helps to just bring me out of this, I would say, dark place that I'm in at the moment, which is, you know, as I said, I'm attributing to low estrogen. So let's see. I'll keep you posted. My prescription is in the post as we speak. So I haven't started anything. So over the coming weeks and months, I'll keep you posted on how I'm getting on. Okay, so that was just a little bit about a little sideline about my own story, because it kind of ties in nicely with these questions. So let me just go back to where we were. Okay, so I was saying my personal opinion is that I do want to use it, but, you know, completely respect and understand that some people don't and some people can't. Again, these are conversations between you and your doctor, or if you choose to seek out a menopause specialist doctor like I did. And I'll tell you, actually, before we move on, that I saw a doctor called Dr. Mandy Leonhard. She's a fully qualified in GMC, so the General Medical Registered GP. She has received the Certificate of Menopause Care by the British Menopause Society in 2018. And her website, so she just has chosen to practice privately now rather than via the NHS. Her website is hormoneequilibrium.co.uk. And I'll put this in the show notes in case anyone wants to check her out. She's based, I can't remember where she's based, somewhere in the UK, nowhere near me. So I approached her to see if she would do online consultations. She does prefer to do in person, but she does offer online consultations as well where needed. So just, you can go to her website and see where she is. I think it's the Cavendish Health Centre. She also practices that. So you can look that up as well and see where they are. So let's go back to the rest of Ella's question. So she said, okay, so her question about, she had a friend with a medical background who said, you can only be on HRT for 10 years, so delay it for as long as possible. So this actually isn't true. It has been what's commonly the message that's commonly been put out there in previous years, but with more sort of more recent like progression in research and kind of, you know, doctors really specializing in menopause hormone therapy, this isn't actually true. There's many health benefits of being on body identical hormone therapy. So women can usually take it forever. So they don't need to stop taking it after a certain age or after a specific length of time. But again, I'm not qualified to tell you that you can take this forever. I'm just sharing the information that I have from menopause specialist GPs and doctors that I've worked with. And this information is actually available on the Balanced Menopause website. It's all very well referenced with studies. So that's the website that's owned, or I think founded, by Dr. Louise Newson, menopause specialist GP. So again, like I said, there's lots of research there that she references. And according to them, you can take it forever. You don't have to stop at a certain age or only take it for a specific length of time. I think a lot of the rhetoric around only being able to take it for 10 years probably applies, this is just my guess, to these sort of old school synthetic forms of estrogen and progestin, synthetic form of progesterone that were used back in the day. So when I look back to when my mum was on HRT, she was taking oral estrogen, and that is essentially the synthetic form. I know she was taking the synthetic form back in the day. And I believe, you know, that those particular forms, which aren't prescribed anymore unless it's the contraceptive pill, but for menopause hormone therapy, it's the like I said, the gold standard now is the body identical forms. So I think that sort of 10-year thing only applies to the old school ways of using hormone therapy. And, you know, a lot of women worry about breast cancer when it comes to hormone therapy. And again, according to Dr. Louise Newson, who's a menopause specialist GP, founded that Balanced Menopause app. And it's a great resource website if you want to go to it and just have a look at all different fact sheets that are all properly referenced. According to them, the use of body identical estrogen progesterone doesn't actually increase the risk of breast cancer. But again, this has to be discussed on a case by case basis with your doctor, because some doctors in some cases will say there is an increased risk for you, for that particular person. And therefore, you know, if they rule out that you're a good candidate for it, then so be it. You need to listen to that, obviously, and take that advice. So what I just want to say is that whether or not a person chooses to use HRT or hormone therapy, menopause hormone therapy, or whether they can't, maybe they can't, they've told they've been advised not to, or they don't want to, nutrition and lifestyle interventions, you know, nutrition and lifestyle habits are really, really so important. It's not one or the other. I have a lot of people saying, if I don't want to take hormone therapy, what can I do instead, or what's an alternative? I mean, there's no literal alternative to using hormone therapy, because hormone therapy is hormone therapy. There's no literal alternative, but they'll say, you know, what sort of nutrition and lifestyle habits should I be doing if I'm not taking it? And my argument is, even if you're taking it, you still have to, you know, really, really consider nutrition and lifestyle habits and how important they are. They're probably even more important. They're just even more important either way. So either way, nutrition and lifestyle habits should always be considered. And essentially, that's the work that I do. So I don't advise, or, you know, on hormone therapy, I can't. I have absolutely no basis for doing that. It's always a conversation that has to be had with your doctor. All I wanted to do today was share the knowledge that I have on it. But everything I've spoken about needs to be discussed with your doctor. You know, essentially, don't take my word for it. I'm just sharing, kind of answering the questions that have been presented to me. But where I come in is supporting people with their nutrition and lifestyle habits. And also on a one-to-one basis, when I work with clients, I can really dive deep into their own unique set of circumstances, their health history, their current nutrition and lifestyle, their previous nutrition and lifestyle history, and advise them from there, you know, what they're struggling with, what they're trying to achieve, what their goals are, what it is they're trying to alleviate or support. And with all of that knowledge, I can come up with a kind of roadmap for them in terms of nutrition, lifestyle, supportive supplements, any particular testing that might be helpful, you know, blood work, Dutch hormone testing, other functional testing that could be helpful to support their journey and really help to optimize their health, their well-being, future-proof their health. Whether or not that person is using hormone therapy or not is kind of beside the point when it comes to the work that I do. It would just complement, you know, either way. So just to wrap this up then, I hope this has been helpful. And just to remind, you know, the choice to use hormone therapy or not is individual, very individual, as well as to how somebody will experience it. Like I said, I've got mine in the post. My very low dose estrogen and progesterone, just to see how I go. And it may or may not work for me. We're going to have to see. It's an absolute first for me. I'm sort of excited because I do so much, obviously, on a day-to-day basis, very right, naturally. It's what I do. I mean, I live and breathe this stuff. But I'm still struggling in certain areas. So will this be, I don't, you know, it's never going to be a panacea because nothing ever is, but it may just support me to deal with, you know, to help just lift those levels of estrogen that are potentially so low that I'm just really struggling. But as I said, if you decide not to use it as well, hormone therapy, if I decided I didn't want to, even though this doctor said, oh, you could benefit from it. If I said, no, I don't want to, that's my choice. And I could still support myself very, you know, in different ways through nutrition and lifestyle. But of course, there's an argument as to whether or not that would be as future-proof protective for me or not. You know, I don't really know that yet, but I will be sharing my journey with you as we go over the coming weeks and months. So I hope that's been helpful. Another one book I just wanted to recommend that's really, really helpful to help you sort of understand this stuff. And this is written by a naturopathic doctor called Lara Bryden. She is based in New Zealand. The book is called Hormone Repair Manual. So just look that up on Amazon. It's a fantastic book. Highly recommend it. Very easy to read from cover to cover. Shouldn't take long. And she just really speaks in simple terms and simple language. So I would definitely encourage you to get that book and have a good read. So if anyone, just before we go, if anybody would like to book a discovery call, to discuss one-to-one support from me in your journey, then please do. The link to book it will be in the show notes. It's also over on my website, francescaliparotti.com. You can just book in for a free 30-minute chat and we'll see if we're the right fit for each other, if I can help you. And then from there, just go, you know, go forward and work together if it is the right fit. So thank you for listening and I'll see you in the next episode. And please send any questions over to francesca@francescaliparotti.com. Any questions or ideas for future topics, I would love to hear from you. Bye for now. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.